You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 547. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me, but not for long, because I see he's packing up over here. My man's ready to go on vacation. It is a rare off week for the UFC, and it looks like my man Cole Coffee is taking full advantage of that. I'm seeing tackle boxes over here, bags. I mean, the staff is working diligently to get everything prepared for
your journey.
I had
to make one like to string the fishing reel, and that was a pain. I was like, young staffer, come in here, please. I've done this wrong 3 times.
Oh, man.
I am getting ready to do a little. And it's funny. I think when most people, when you say like fishing trip, people think like deep sea.
Right.
They think of like in a fishing excursion. I'm going up to Wisconsin to see where I used to go there every summer when I was a kid. That's where my grandparents' farm was. And that's where my grandparents are buried. That's where my dad's buried. It's where, like, if you would go through this cemetery, it's interesting. I was talking to somebody about it the other day. It's a very small plot of land that was just not even a half mile up the road from where my grandpa's farm is. You could see generations of our family through there. And even my grandparents' brothers and their family and their uncles and their cousins and their whatever. So it's really interesting going through this cemetery. So we try to go by there. So we're going there. We're going to be a little bit north from there where that is. And it's just lake fishing.
Nice.
Got to get renting a pontoon. We're just going to be out. My sister and her husband and my niece. And then my brother-in-law's and her husband.
Nice.
Yeah, so we're literally just camping.
Fall weather in Wisconsin, I bet it's going to be nice, right?
And it's like, I'm not sure what the altitude is there, but you see much higher up. So like the stars are really big at night. And it's like they don't have like the light pollution.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's gorgeous. So I'm literally going to be subsisting off of cheese curds, pepperoni sticks, and maybe some fresh caught fish. And then, you know, just whatever. My brother-in-law can cook like a mofo. I call myself a pretty good cook. I can grill some shit. My sister did well. She married her high school sweetheart, and that motherfucker can cook.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's really good. So it's always funny because we're just like, what can we get you to cook? What do we want to get? What are we getting? We buying you some meat? What are you going to grill for us? What are you going to do? So, yeah. So my part of this, I'm bringing – Rolling Smoke here has the everything rub,
yep.
Which I don't know if you're familiar with it or anybody's had. It's like you can literally put on everything.
Rolling Smoke, a great local barbecue.
Great
institution.
Local barbecue.
Yeah, if you're ever in town in Vegas and you're looking for like a local spot,
you gotta go. They just did the Best of Las Vegas, just wrapped up. I'm not sure if they're gonna get it, but they were one of the ones. And I'm always like, I was digging through. I was like, where's Rolling Smoke? Where is it?
Yep.
But they have this great seasoning, so I'm bringing 3 bags of the seasoning. And it's funny because he was like, make sure you bring the seasoning or we ain't going to eat. And I was like, well, that means we're smoking some shit. We're going to be grilling some shit.
That's awesome.
So I'm looking forward to, yeah, just getting away from it's been a crazy stretch, crazy, you know, we've all been dealing with just crazy schedule. But, man, it's been a while to just really decompress.
Got to unplug a little bit, right?
Just unplug.
Take advantage of it, man.
You know,
take your vacation days.
Yep.
Man, people that are going through the corporate world and the business, man. I feel like people as a whole are starting to realize that. But I think it's so true because I know people that would like not even take their vacation days.
Yep.
Not even, you know, oh, no, I don't need all that time.
Because they feel like, oh, well, the work's, they're going to reward me for this.
Yeah.
They see what I'm doing.
They're not.
They're not.
And I'm not trying to just, you know, poop all over the corporate world. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, like, that's part of your compensation package. Yeah. Like, that is part of what you have earned and your job gives you. Take your vacation time, man. Take that time. And I know, and obviously it's been a long time at this point since I've worked for Gannett and all that, but I know it's still it's switched over to like the quote unquote unlimited time off, managed time off.
I was just gonna say,
And I know
because we used to have over when you've been there as long as we had, we used to get like 5 weeks.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep.
I haven't taken 5 weeks.
Yeah, you got to take
the
five, MMA Roadshow, definitely talking about MMA, but we'll talk about MMA. Like, but I do think that's important because I remember when we were switching over to that, and again, I think that's immediately people fall back into that structure of like, well, I don't want to ask for time off. Like, bro, no, listen, you would have been getting 5 weeks, at least take 5 weeks, you know what I mean? And just know that, like, you deserve it. You deserve time off. People need time off or you get burned out at work.
Or you got to burn out. You're going to decompress. And I know some people that need the days off right now. UFC staff.
UFC staff needs some time. Boy, and I'm sure, you know what's funny? I was just having a conversation with somebody this morning about that because you saw Dana's comments about, I'm sure, the schedule. I think it was on the Impulsive podcast. He kind of laid out there's going to be 44 UFC events, 16 to 18 boxing, 12 power slap, 14 BJJ. And I know that they've been talking about it, that, you know, they need to hire some more staff, and they intend to hire some more staff, but they haven't been hired yet.
No.
So there's, I mean, I know the boxing this past week, we were seeing all the same faces that we know already.
And the boxing that we saw this past weekend, the TKO thing, the collaboration with Riyadh Season is not the Zuffa boxing.
Yeah, and I do think it's very important to point that out because I've seen a lot of people that are like,
because if they're like, how can they do 14 allegiance? You know, like, that's not going to happen.
No, not doing 14 allegiance. And I did see a lot of people that were like, oh, Dana said he was going to come in and he hates the pacing of boxing. And then what did they do? Yep. They had this incredibly long show.
Yep.
That wasn't his call to make. So
that was Riyadh Season.
Yeah, let's just
Riyadh Season's the one that's been doing all the concerts.
Might as well just jump into it, right? I mean, the Canelo versus Crawford fallout, it was a Riyadh Season event.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily the greatest night of fights, I wouldn't say. I mean, the main event was fun. The main event was very technical, very, very good.
There was a few other fights that were fun. There was a few that really stunk.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't think Callum Walsh necessarily shined in the spot. And I like Callum a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't think he shined in that spotlight, in that opportunity. You know, got the job done against a tough opponent.
I was going to say he had a tough opponent.
He did have a tough opponent.
You know, I mean, I think they, you know, I think anybody wouldn't have been happy unless he went in there and got like a crazy knockout. But I think a lot of the people that were there, if you looked at what was going on during the week, the open workouts and everything, the crowd wanted Vargas to do something.
Yeah.
They didn't realize that their guy was the lamb that they were bringing, hopefully for a slaughter, but it didn't happen that
way.
You know, I mean, he was tougher than what
he got a win over a legitimate opponent for sure. You know what I mean? So, I would say overall, and I think probably the pacing had something to do with it. But I will say, Allegiant Stadium, the setup, the atmosphere. I mean, I will never get over how late arriving boxing crowds are. You know what I mean?
Oh my goodness gracious!
To know, I mean, because that even during the main card, like, I mean, now granted, you're talking about a big stadium, and there were a lot of people walking around the concourse, so they were still in the area. You know what I mean? But they weren't in their seats until the co-main event.
Yep.
But once they were there for that main event, it's just like we talked about last week, man. Boxing, when it's at its peak, it is pretty cool. It did feel big, like the setup they had in there. The atmosphere. I thought it was really cool to see. I do think, you know, challenging for a UFC event to come in there. You'd need the right card and that sort of thing. But I thought for production standpoint, they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think anything to try to do what they were trying to do in such a large space where anything could go wrong with such a big venue, I thought it was pretty seamless, you know? And I mean, and even with the people in the seats, that was boxing. That wasn't about the card. I think UFC fans have shown that they get there early regardless. I don't think we've ever had that issue. So I think if they were there, we wouldn't have that same issue.
True.
But even around, like, the Allegiant, there were some neat things to look at. So I think people were choosing that opportunity to, you know, kind of walk around the concourse, like you said. But even when I was transitioning from the tent on the outside that was just immediately outside of the Allegiant and then going in to go up to the press ledge or go in the restroom, there was nonstop people coming in. So it was just like a nonstop trickle that was going. And people, I think, were just either taking the time. And to get there, the parking's a little bit confusing sometimes. So maybe that added a little bit. But I think it was just inherently the boxing. I don't think we'd have that with MMA. But it's just a neat – it was such a neat little venue.
It's
it was very cool to see there something different. I don't know if this is like just a Legion thing, but the snacks game – The snack game that was brought this night was quite reputable.
You had boxes of candy, bro.
You started it. You started it. So I was like, I'm not going to do the carb thing. I'm still trying to do the keto thing, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to do this candy. I was like, how dare they bring that for snacks? I think when they say snacks, I'm thinking we're going to have little snack food.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a movie theater snack.
It was like movie theater snacks.
Mike and Ike's, you know, it was Skittles.
It was that NFL setup, bro. So if you see my Instagram, I took a couple pictures. So there were two places for press. As you said,
your camera's got diabetes now. All the candy it took pictures. I didn't want to document anything.
No, I didn't share those things publicly. I was going to take them home to my kid. I'm not sure much of them made it home to my kid, to be honest with you. But it was such a long night. And, well, in fairness.
And then I stole some of your Skittles.
You did steal some of my Skittles. And they also they had promised us lunch when we got there, and we didn't get it until four hours later.
Snacks.
Which was funny because
you're going to feed us popcorn and candy.
It was funny. They did it because typically UFC media, they'll have a meal when you get there. You have a quick media meal, and then you start your work. And they literally said, well, the thing is, boxing media, as we've talked about, they said boxing media doesn't show up until like the main card. Yep. So we're waiting to put out the meal. So that was
waiting hours.
A goofy little detail, but it was a detail nonetheless. But yeah,
goes to show it wasn't a UFC event right there. UFC,
right,
right there.
UFC PR wouldn't let us go hungry. No, but it was – so we came in, like you said, there was by the way, the logistics of Allegiant Stadium were awesome. They had a media parking lot right across the street. You literally just crossed the street, walked right in. Media tent was right there where you guys did all the post-fight stuff.
Yep.
And then even if you were just in the media tent, they still had access. Now, I had access to a second area, which was basically the lower level, I think section 127, if I remember right. They had built a platform, and there were tables and chairs and power and all that. So there was a place for a limited amount of media there, kind of first come, first serve seating. And I went there, and I took a picture. If you look on my Instagram, you could see the first picture when I put, like, hey, doors are open. That's where it was. But then everybody had access to the press ledge as well, which was very, very high up. And I took another picture from there that talks about, hey, like kind of a bird's eye view. But I actually ended up staying up there, even though I had access to the lower level, just because, man, there was like – it was like a proper table with power. And instead of like just a folding table and folding
room
chairs.
Room to move.
There was a restroom right behind us. There was a coffee machine. I mean, like so even though it was much higher up, where we were in the lower level, you'd still end up using the screens more or less. You know what I mean? It's not like one option was ringside and one side was overhead.
Yeah.
So I was just like, you know what? Might as well take the more comfortable overhead. And I actually enjoyed being up there. But that's where the NFL media sits. And
that's a nice setup.
So they got the NFL media. You remember way back in the day when Dana White was at that press conference and he was like, you see, you got your MMA reporters way down here. And then you got your baseball reporters and your basketball reporters and the NFL
then
up here.
You got your NFL.
Well, we got to see what that – and we got to see what Mark Raimondi is getting treated like every week, bro. He's getting the nice snacks and the soda machine and the coffee maker.
Oh, the soda machine. Bro,
with the crushed ice.
With the crushed – so I will tell you, I was trying to – when we were in the tent, I was like, no, I'm not going to touch that candy. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be good. I'm like, let's just go sit in the media room. Let's go up the press ledge. Let's get away from this temptation. And then we get up there and then Morgan gets there. And he's got his boxes of candy that he's supposedly taken home to his kids.
I was going to take them home to my kid. I don't know how much I actually made it home.
And then and I was like, God, I'm not going to do this. And I was like, well, let me see some of them Skittles you got there. I was like, fuck. And then I had some of the Skittles. And then next thing you know, somebody's like, hey, they brought candy upstairs. And we're like, what? Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, let me go check this out. Walk over there. And it was like the gates of movie theater heaven opened up. And it was just... full, and these are full boxes, not like little itty bitty bags. Full boxes of Skittles, Lemon Heads.
Oh, it's like when you're trick or treating and you Reese's show up to the
cup.
House that gives
the
you
rich
the full
house.
Side.
Yeah,
the
rich you went house to the rich house. You snuck into the rich neighborhood. So
that's what it was.
I will tell you.
It was
I grabbed three Reese's cups right off the bat, three Skittles, and I eventually got two more Lemon Heads, and I think that was it. I crushed the three. Two of the Reese's cups. Oh. Right when I went back, I was like, "Well, so much for the no carb keto thing."
Got a little cheat. It's earned. It's earned. Day,
and, but then the best part of that, they had the soda pop machine that had like Coke Zero, Diet Coke. I was like, "Who's got Coke Zero on the machine?" I was like, "Maybe I haven't been to a soda machine in a while." But I was like, "Bro, this is amazing.
That was funny. The little thing. It's the little thing.
It was the little things. I was happy as a kid in the candy store.
I enjoyed it. I told everybody I enjoyed it. Like I said, maybe the fights left a little bit to be desired, but I thought overall the night was fun. I know you dealt with the entire week. I didn't. I had intended to be at the press conference, but I had something come up that I needed to deal with at CFFC, so I didn't make it there. I do want to talk about the press conference in just a moment. But overall, it seemed like, you know, the UFC helped as much as they could with the operations.
They made it so much. I've covered enough boxing. Granted, this would have been probably, outside of like the Mayweather-McGregor, the biggest boxing event that I can think of that I've done. I've done like Pacquiao before and other ones, but nothing compares to what this one was. And I will tell you, regardless what maybe some diehard boxing media would say, the involvement of the UFC PR staff and them running this and help keeping it made it so much more I don't want to say pleasurable, but I didn't want to shoot myself.
It's just less
after
chaotic.
This. It was so much less chaotic.
Less chaotic.
And it was just orderly. And, you know, and I know the only complaints I heard that people were using is the shit that drives me crazy about boxing media. The ones that just run off and they just grab anybody anywhere, cause a commotion just to get their little thing. Whereas here they kept it structured and they were like, you know, stick to what's going on here. If you're going to do it, you can do it elsewhere. Yep. You know, like don't disrupt the whole mechanism just so you can get your interview. Let the fighter go do whatever. And the fighters and people I talked to are like, this is great. I show up, I do what I need to do, and then I go. I don't have to do extra 30 minutes because I don't want to be rude to all these people that have just surrounded me.
Because the fighters don't want to do it.
They
don't
want to
do it because they're contractually obligated to do it.
So, but it was – and I applaud. I mean, I was watching. I could see on the face of the staff they were, just swamped and just trying to get through it. And I made the mistake of trying to ask about – the New York show, and they were clearly not happy that I was trying to talk about something that wasn't right then because they were just trying to get it together. I was like, hey, can I ask you about Media Day in the New York? And they're like, I can't talk about this right now. And I was just like, have a good day. I'm gonna talk to you later.
Well,
you know?
All right, so I want to talk about that as well. Okay, so the one thing I do want to say about operations and everything, because you're right, what I saw and everything, the UFC does it better than anybody. Regardless of what anybody says about if you like their business practices, you like fire pay, whatever. I'm just talking about their operations. It's the best in the business by far. The official weigh-ins. Did we ever get a word as to why they had the official weigh-ins except for the main event, done privately?
Yeah.
So if anybody doesn't know this, they did the official weigh-ins pretty much just like a UFC official weigh-ins. They could come in any order during that time frame.
Yeah, it was just they had a timed window.
So it was just like a UFC event, come in.
Yep.
Except for the main event. Canelo Alvarez, Terrence Crawford weighed in at a separate location that was open. It was private. It was open only to their cameras. Did you hear why?
I did. And, of course, I said off the record, so I guess I could share it here. I did grab a certain person, and I said, hey, off the record, let me just pick your brain. What happened here? What was this all about? And they said usually with a lot of boxing, it's done behind closed doors anyways. They don't usually even have media in there.
Right.
But to their point, they were like, it wasn't just like a room with just a fighter and us. There were members of both sides of the team.
Right.
Both teams had people there so that if there were shenanigans happening, teams wouldn't be able to call BS on it. So they were there watching.
Yeah,
But it's usually at the discretion of the commission of whether it could – I think they just went off of the precedent that it's normally never shown.
It's not normally public.
So I think they use that as a fallback.
Yeah.
But I think they acquiesced to the UFC's like, hey, we always do this open. It's open to whatever. But I don't know. I didn't really hear that there was pushback from the teams and they were asking for it. I didn't hear that. But it just made it seem like, well, this is kind of what we've done, so we just want to do whatever. But we made sure that the teams were there, and we made sure that somebody was videotaping. Because I told him, I was like, well, you know, that's all good and well that you had the teams there. I was like, but the thing I will commend you on is the fact that it was being documented in a video.
Yes, yes.
So you covered your base, so good for that. And he was like, yes, I was glad that we made sure that video was being done. He's like, but teams are on both sides. But it wasn't just like, oh, you know, like, well, now things are whatever. It's still at their discretion that they can not have it. They just need to make sure that the teams – that it's either documented or that both teams are there at the end of the day, that it's fair between the teams.
I'll be honest with you. You know, you're paying a lot of money to put on an event, right? If you're like, we just want this footage for ourselves. I don't care. Like, if it's a production decision where you're like, we know people want to see this footage, and instead of giving it to you, the media, and anybody else that shows up, we're keeping it just for ourselves. I honestly can't blame him for that. You know what I mean? Honestly, if that was a decision, and I don't think that was a decision
I definitely didn't hear that. I don't think we ever saw anything from production. Because they weren't there.
Because I wouldn't hate that, to be honest. If they were like, we're going to do this because we're going to put it out on our channels. And like you said, as long as the other teams are there, it's represented. It's kind of like when you have like, you see this a lot in boxing where the opposing trainer will go watch the opponent's hand wraps and that sort. You know what I mean? So like, as long as they're all good, it just... I will say when it came out, especially because I don't think we got the email until like right before
late.
The damn thing.
It was late. It was late the night before.
Late the night before, and I think they sent one more early the morning of.
Yep.
It just made it feel.
I think they clarified because they were realizing that a lot of us said that we weren't going.
Right.
So that when they clarified in the morning, one in the morning, there's like the other weigh-ins are still public.
Right.
You could do whatever. It's just the main event.
Yeah, but it's like, what do you?
I know, but that's the thing. Yeah. But I think when I initially read it, I was like, okay, well, the weigh-ins are closed.
Yep.
But then I went back and I even pinged our channel. I was like, guys, I think I misread this. I read it as the weigh-ins are closed, but this, I'm pretty sure, just says main event.
Yep.
So the follow-up in the morning was the UFC clarifying that the rest of the weigh-ins were public.
It just made it feel less transparent, right? Yeah. And that's all we want is transparency. We just want to know everything's on the up and up.
It just seemed like boxing was about to box. Was doing boxing, you know, the day before. Like, okay, I get it. When a fighter's making over $100 million, you want to make sure that the fight's happening. When the fight's, you know, when this card is based around this thing, you have all these fans coming, you want to make sure. But at the end of the day, it was filmed, so there's nothing I can bitch about.
Right.
You know, like if he says, hey, well, both teams are there, you know, like nobody's going to, you know, allow us to do shenanigans if both teams are covered.
There, we documented.
But outside of that, it was documented. So I'm like, okay, cool.
Yep.
I just took the fucking morning off. When you said, like, hey, we're not going to do it. That's great. And it's great that Callum Walsh is Dana's boy. Doesn't mean I need to go in there because we were there clearly covering one bout.
Yeah.
And that's the bout you tell me I couldn't do it. I was like, okay, I'll see you at the ceremonials later on tonight.
100%. You know? And by the way, your ceremonials, I almost texted you. I felt for you, brother. I saw your shot for Junkie, and I thought of you instantly. You barely got the face
off.
I got lucky.
I got lucky. I could have been like a ton of the other people up there and just where – it was a sea of people standing on their chairs, raising their cameras on poles, everything. And it was just luck of the draw that my shot happened to be in between two arms and I was able to get the face.
So crazy, man.
You know, because the guy next to me, his shot was blocked.
Blocked.
The one on the left of me, Fox Deportes, whoever thought they were going to set up a fucking broadcast right on the stage. So Oscar pushed back, being a nice guy that he was, could have easily made their shot worse or whatever, he could have been blocked.
Yep.
And I think he was still sort of blocked because of it or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it was
a
crapshoot. I mean, but that was the kind of thing that we knew that there was always the possibility.
Just sucks. I know how much you set up. I know how you make sure that, like.
Well, that's why one thing where I will give credit to the UFC and the staff because, you know, they had me a spot marked.
Yep.
You know, which saved me to get into the front row gave me a chance where I have to shoot over. So for me, you know, it helped having their involvement because I got a little extra love that we would normally get.
That's cool.
You know, so that helped me as opposed
to
whatever.
That's respect right there, bro. That's respect.
You know, and I appreciate that, you know. So I'm not going to shit on about the rest of the week or whatever. You know, they did me a solid. But then you got guys next to me that were just like, oh, can you move over a little bit? I was like, bro. There's a guy coming to my left, like Oscar. I was like, there's another spot, another guy coming. And they're trying to set up thing. Oh, we're trying to do a live shot. And I was like, well, yesterday you all was on the ground. He's like, yeah, but this is a better shot. I'm like, of course it is. But this isn't a fucking studio, dude. This is a camera riser. And there's a camera guy that's supposed to be right next to you. But Oscar being nice and rather trying to be accommodating, because what's what we do? That's MMA media for you. I guarantee if it was another boxing dude, be like, F you.
Right.
Squeeze over or do whatever. Oscar stepped back a little bit and tucked behind me a little bit, but he didn't have to do that.
Right.
He was just being nice to them, you know. But when you looked around the stage, and I took some video from on the stage, bro, I felt like claustrophobic. It was like so tucked in. But if when you look at it closely, there were like three or four different outlets doing like live hits from the camera riser. And I'm like, this is bonkers. But that's boxing, and that's how big this event was. And it's usually the international outlets that'll do it when they've sent somebody from another country. I get it. They have a show that's waiting for that hit, you know, and it's going to make all the difference of their coverage. You know, I understand that, but you know, in the back riser, there was literally 25 by 10 feet of open space. Yeah. But yes, if you would have looked towards the stage, you would see all the cameras in front of you. But
too funny.
At the end of the day, you know, they're there to try to push the boundaries so they get their shot, and they do. And that's boxing, you know. And that's why it's just, like, so frustrating sometimes.
So two things that I took out of it outside of just the boxing stuff. Number one, there was the press conference brouhaha between the reporter, and I'm so sorry I don't have his name.
Sean Zittel?
There you go.
I'm butchering his last name, but it's definitely Sean.
Yeah, I've seen it print. I'll be honest, I actually don't know how it's spoken, but you are right. That is the right name. Going at it with Dana a little
Zittel.
Bit.
Sean Z Boxing at Sean at S E A N Z Boxing.
Yep.
Sean Zittel.
So I saw a lot. I just went away because obviously I've been in a lot of press conferences. I really enjoyed people reaching out and trashing me and saying, "This is how you do it, John." I'm like, well, I don't really do this anymore, but okay. I was like, all right. But I did want to weigh in because I want to say, number one, you're right. I wouldn't normally ask a question like that at a press conference. I have. I've asked. I had to ask Conor McGregor about sexual assault allegations at a press conference because I knew that was the only time that we were going to get him. I've asked Vitor Belfort about testosterone use at a press conference because that was the only access we had to him. So I have asked questions like that in the past. I will say. So I want to say, Tim,
is that the one in Brazil that where you tried to get the media after you?
Yeah, where they said they should kill me. And again, we've made up for it. We've talked about it, so I'm not throwing them under the bus. We've talked about it, but that was the right one. So I have asked questions at press conferences. I will always say, so I want to, first of all, because I saw some people that were kind of like trashing that. And I say this too, and I'll say there's a time and a place for everything, right? And I don't necessarily think the press conference is the best time to get the answer, but that doesn't mean that it's not okay to ask it. So if anybody that was like trying to trash Sean and be like, oh, why did you do this? Because I did see people that were like, kind of what Dana said, like, hey, we're up here to talk about these fighters. And, you know, and that is true.
Yeah.
But you're still a credentialed media member at a media event. You have the right to ask whatever under God's green earth that you want to ask. So if anybody said that Sean was out of line, he was not. He was absolutely not out of line. That's your right as a media member to ask whatever you want to ask about. So I do applaud him for that, for asking the questions that he felt. I do understand why Dana said, I think Dana probably went a little bit too far. I mean, like, oh, you're an asshole
or
whatever.
You
just want to be an asshole. You just want to show off or whatever. I feel like it is also within Dana's right to say, hey, man, I'm not really here to talk about that today. I'm here to talk about this fight. But I will say, I hope that Sean follows up and gets the interview.
Yeah.
You got to get the interview. And this is, if you do
hold him to it.
Hold him accountable. That's it. Yeah. He said, if you want to talk about this, let's get an interview. And if you can't get the interview, if all of a sudden like UFC PR is ignoring you or whatever, make that public. Yep. Let people know. Hold them accountable.
Yep.
And I think you will get a much better answer. Dana will. I mean, we've had those one-on-one conversations. We had the scrums back in the day when Dana would sit there for an hour.
Yep.
He will answer all your questions. He just doesn't want to do it there, which is why I always said it's not really – and people will get on, oh, you don't want to ask the tough questions at the press conference. Going to be honest with you, man. The press conferences honestly are kind of – I don't want to say useless, but like Dana can barely hear you.
Yep.
A lot of times you can't even hear the answer. Like,
yep.
You know what I mean? Sometimes, why didn't you ask a follow-up? Because I couldn't even hear the answer because the way the audio is set up. And I mean, the press conferences are kind of useless for actually getting good answers and that sort of thing. So anyway, I just want to weigh in on that because obviously I've been in that position. I've heard Mark Raimondi ask some questions and get booed by the crowd and stuff. Like, I mean, look. The reporter, Sean, was well within his rights for asking that.
Yep.
I understand why Dana didn't want to answer it there as well. I think, you know, he didn't necessarily have to handle it as hard as he did, but I just hope that interview happens. Make that interview happen. If you do that, man, kudos, you know?
Yeah, I ended up I think it was the next day, bumped into him when I was heading back to my car to leave from T-Mobile. He happened to hop in the elevator, and there was a bunch of other people, but I was just like, dude, I was like, good job yesterday, you know, sticking with your question. I thought you sounded very clear and concise, and you stayed to the point. You didn't get really flustered. I couldn't really hear because since it was so loud, again, I couldn't really hear some of the comebacks because I know some people are like – I was like – because I was praising him in our channel. I was like, yeah, you know, he did a really good job. You know, I thought he stuck to the point. Somebody's like, well, I don't know about some of the extra follow-up. I was like, I – couldn't understand. I don't remember hearing anything.
Exactly,
but I thought
my point, right? Like, it's not a really good place. Like, it's not a good place for a dialogue.
Yeah.
It just isn't.
But I mean, I wanted to make it to a point and just say, hey, bro, good job, you know, regardless what you hear. So, and I'm sure a lot of other media kind of reached out and said, hey, you know, good job. Because I'd seen him around unboxing for a long time, and then I'd seen him cover some Aces games. But that was one of the first, you know, I knew when I'd seen him unboxing.
So is he a Vegas guy?
I don't know. I assume so. You know, yeah. Since I saw him at the Aces.
Unless I can't imagine the traveling media for the
Aces.
Actually,
I'm sorry. It wasn't Aces. It was NBA spring game. So he might have came in town for that. That's why I wasn't quite sure. But he might be from here. But regardless, I was like, dude, good job. You know, whatever you're going to hear, it's the only time I'll ever probably really see him outside of like boxing or whatever. But I was like, I just want to give you a shout out and say I thought you did a good job of presenting your thing and not getting flustered and doing whatever, you know. So – but no, good on him, you know.
Definitely was not out of line. Definitely was not. I always, during my media career or whatever, people would always give me flack or whatever. But to me, my goal was always to be able to get an answer. Like, not to just say that I asked the question, but to actually get an answer. And so I do think that's where things kind of, you know, again, I wouldn't have asked it at the press conference because I just don't think it's the best place to do it. But I want to make sure everybody knows that dude was not out of line whatsoever. Now, again, he didn't get an answer, really. So hopefully he follows up and gets an answer. And that's why I always used to say, hey, man, there's a best time and a best place for everything if you really actually want to get an answer. The other thing that I took out of this past week is that I don't have – and again, and this is why I think it's so important to point out, this was not TKO Boxing. This was Riyadh season that Dana was brought in to promote. I got to be honest, I don't necessarily have high hopes for a massive long-standing partnership between Dana and Riyadh season and Turkey. I think it's a little bit – Dana has a way that he likes to do things. You know, he'll tell you, there's a formula. There's what we do. It's how we do it. And he wants to have control over that. And obviously Turkey, putting up all the money, you know, backing this thing financially – he wants to do things his way. And that's why a lot of the things that happened the way they did. And I don't know that either one of them is going to be real easy on backing down and conceding to the other of like, yeah, let's do it your way since you think that's the better way. And so because of that, I don't know if the partnership is going to be long-standing or incredibly fruitful between those two.
Yeah, I mean, I see it being, you know, until the end goal's either been met. I think both of them realize that they offered an opportunity to build something, to make some cash. And until they don't need that other person, I think they'll stick with what they're doing.
Right.
You know, Turkey and his organization, Riyadh, needs an end to the U.S. Dana and the UFC and those people are providing that.
Yep.
You know,
great front man as well.
Great front man, all that other kind of stuff. But if they become second nature and people just start thinking Riyadh season is just like whatever, you don't need a spokesman because the product will have built itself up. Same thing with
Kellerman.
Dana. Oh my God, that dude, fucking. I know people love that dude.
I like Kellerman a lot, but I
used to think he was okay. Now he's just, boy.
I didn't think he delivered that role.
I don't know, man. Is he a drug user or something? He seemed like he had a bad rough week.
Like he had a rough week, man. I like Kelly. I've always liked him on broadcast.
I always thought he was a dick.
I didn't think that was a star performance.
No, I didn't think he did that great, but I'm sure he got paid well. But whatever.
Sure he got paid well.
But yeah, and same thing with Dana. You know, he's not going to turn down making inroads into other countries and making money. And you know, at the end of the day, as long as they're making money off each other and they can tolerate each other, I see the relationship going forward. But I think at some point, if they don't need the UFC and Dana's involvement to put on these Riyadh season shows in the U.S., they won't use them. They don't need it.
Because from everything that we've heard, TKO Boxing is not going to be this. It's not going to be Allegiant Stadium. It's
TKO,
not going to be Canelo
versus Crawford. I see like TKO
like
Contender Series, but for boxing.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. They're going to be trying to develop talent. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I got that because, again, the UFC was trying to do as much as they could operationally, but I know you know, again, like the pacing and the all that, you know what I mean? That was not what the UFC wants to do.
And go back to that press conference where Dana was ready to open it up, and then Turkey's dude was off at the side at the end, and he started talking before Dana got a chance. You felt like you could just see Dana turning red as it was happening. And I was like, oh, yeah, Dana don't lie.
And I'll be honest with you, I didn't read too much into the because a lot of people at the press conference read into, like, Turkey saying, and now Dana will make a very special announcement. And Dana was like, all right, let's rip this out and do the face house. I didn't read too much into that because I honestly think Dana just didn't hear him, to be honest with you.
It's quite possible, but I think Turkey's done that before where he's, you know, like they either talk about stuff and, you know, it could be the fact that Turkey's used to saying something and then maybe not getting pushback and, you know, doesn't understand that when somebody's I have a better time to push something.
He gets zero
pushback. Maybe he didn't pay attention to the fact that Dane was like, oh, no, I already had it planned to go for something else.
Right.
And Turkey in his brain could have had that conversation, just literally forgot about it.
Yeah, I just didn't take that moment. Like, I did see a lot of people like identify that moment as like, oh my God, this relationship is not good.
No, it was just awkward.
It
was just awkward exchange. But I mean, like, it could have happened anything. If you have two business partners and somebody forgets that, oh shit, I forgot that we decided we were going to not say that till this or whatever, you know, especially if it was going to be like, Dan was like, hey, I got a broadcast hit in the morning with millions of viewers. I'm going to save it for that, you know, as opposed to Turkey here getting caught up in the moment and like, oh, say it here, Dana. You know, like, no, bro.
Overall, big event. I did come home. Well, it was funny. I, you know, the fact that we were all watching UFC at the same time. We talked about that last week going into like nobody was going to feel guilty about it. I even saw like the UFC staff was watching the UFC in the back while they're working boxing. You know what I mean? So like,
I had a second laptop open front row just watching. The like best. It didn't care.
Noche UFC was great. I did think it was funny that they played the highlights inside the building of the UFC.
That was pretty cool.
Smart.
Yeah,
man.
I saw that you had tweeted that or whatever.
Yeah. And I was kind of just tongue in cheeking it as like, oh, this was the master plan. Like, let's just fill Allegiant Stadium. But it was funny and it was smart. And it was kind of cool because it was Noche UFC. Obviously, you had a Canelo crowd there. You know, it ended with Viva Mexico, so everybody enjoyed it. I will say the Noche UFC card, especially the main event, was good. I feel a little bad saying this because, like, I like Noche UFC. I think it's a great idea. And I know they still did, like, the custom graphics and the special Octagon girl outfits and, you know, the framing on the canvas of where the names are. Like, you know, they still did the Noche UFC things. But after last year at the Sphere, like, it just kind of, like, nothing can measure up to that, right? So it's almost like it just feels like a step down or a letdown. It's like, but how can it not be? You know what I mean? Like, anything that's at the Sphere, like, it just...
And just the whole, I felt like the whole spectacle, the whole promotion, it was the only thing that they talked about going into it.
True.
It's hard to compete against... It's hard for anything. It would have been hard for the NFL to try to market a big event going against the biggest boxing event of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, you felt like it was second fiddle, and the fights didn't play like it was second fiddle, but in terms of like what people were paying attention, it was definitely second fiddle.
Yeah.
And it just, but I will tell you, they did knock it out of the park again with the ring girls. Well, the ring girls themselves, but the ring girls' outfits I thought were fantastic.
I did too.
I don't know if they used the same costume designer that they did for Noche, which I forget her name, but she's like an award-winning costume designer. She's badass. But when I looked at those costumes, I was like, oh, I bet they used her again because they were fantastic. And it was just so strange. There's a UFC event going on, but we're watching boxing, and we're seeing the UFC girls in the boxing ring, and we're seeing – different girls completely in the UFC event,
so
you know, but they were gorgeous, and I thought the outfits were fantastic. So at least in that, I was like, okay, I'm feeling like we're getting the Noche, at least from that side of things. But
the World MMA Awards voting closes in a couple of weeks. I think it's October, the first week of October. But the Ring Card Girl of the Year, I don't know if you saw the nominations. One of the nominations is all 8 Octagon girls from last year's Noche UFC as Ring Card Girl of the Year. I thought that was
that's pretty cool.
I thought that was pretty cool, right?
Because I know there were a few that were just woo-wee. But yeah, as a whole.
Clearly
just,
you're talking about the costumes.
Yeah, of course the costumes. I mean, like, did you see that? I'm a theater major for Pete's sake. Come on.
I haven't heard. I don't know how the voting goes. I don't monitor any of it. But,
I
think that would be
getting
cool,
my vote now.
I think that'd be a cool one to win, right? You know what I mean? Because
that would be very unique.
Yeah, because it's a once in a lifetime kind of thing or whatever.
And what was cool too is like, even when you see the new ring girls that, you know, they get brought into, and even if they just work in an event or whatever, a lot of times these working for a big promotion like the UFC doing these things, it kind of is a platform to launch them into bigger things. And I will say that Noche, when we did the Top Golf, the meet and greet party or whatever, all the ring card girls are there, and they were so just eager and fun, and they were happy, and it was just like you could see like that they were on the doorstep of maybe something big starting from them. So if they could get something like this to help push them elsewhere, it would be really, really just kind of cool.
It would be cool.
Not that it's nobody – I mean, we, of course, want our regular favorites to win or whatever, but I think it would be kind of cool to throw a bone to, like, something else, somebody different, you know, and maybe launch a career or something. But yeah, oh, man. Costume's fantastic. I'm not. I feel like I'm doing her disservice. I'm gonna look up her name while we're chatting because I feel like bad. I'm not giving her.
I would have made one more change between the organizations, by the way, and I don't know if these discussions were held or how it played out. But I would have made one more change. Between
Marina Tobina.
That was the costume designer.
Yeah, nice. 7-time Emmy award-winning designer.
That was a big deal. See, some of those costumes at Noche.
At the Noche here in Vegas was ridiculous.
That
ridiculous.
You know, look. I mean, here we are a year later. I know people at the time were like, the card, the this, the that, whatever. Dude, that event was special.
It was fantastic.
Just something. I mean, that was that was once in a lifetime. And I'm telling you what, this White House card, I'm hoping I get to be there. You know, I don't know what the limitations are going to be for me. But that's
hearing
once in a lifetime, too.
Like, massive background checks.
Yeah.
And, like
well, I might be excluded.
I know. serious background checks.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just, like, probably something maybe akin to, like, when we've done trips onto military bases and stuff like that, you have to pass background checks so you can get, like, the preferred visitor status and you can get behind on certain different things.
I know I've had to get, like... I know we had to get it. Well, Brazilian visas weren't difficult. They just did it because we were making Brazilians get visas. I know I had to get a Russian visa to do Russia. I know I had to do a Chinese visa. So I've done a couple like those background checks. And I do have TSA pre-check now. I was not the greatest
kid. So you might
kid.
Be good.
I was not the greatest. I've been very good as an adult. As a youngster, I was not the most.
Well, now who knows what they would flag somebody for?
Right.
You know, it might not be the typical stuff.
Well,
you know?
We don't even know if they're going to allow media, period, or how much media or whatever. But I would. But again, I would really, really like to be there.
You could be over there with the other people across the street.
There's 80,000 in the park, just gonna, right across the street. Over. I would really like to do that. That's once in a lifetime stuff too. You know, I mean, again. Regardless of what
weigh-ins at the Lincoln, what is it, Lincoln Memorial?
Lincoln Memorial. They said the fighters are walking out of the Oval Office when they walk in.
That's crazy.
That's amazing. So I'm looking forward to that. I actually was talking to my wife and
kid. It would be absolutely bonkers. But I could see that be one of the event where I can see other people within Gannett like, we'll cover that DC one. You don't have to fly out for one.
That'd be one where I'd probably pay my own. I mean, I obviously have to pay my own way now. I don't work for anybody else. But
I'm kind of torn whether I'd be really pushing for it. I think it'd be super unique, but I also realize that knowing me, how crazy and all the extra hoops we'd have to do during that week, it might just be so frustrating.
That's
to
once
just,
in
like,
a lifetime, though, bro.
I know,
like,
it is kind
once of in a lifetime, man.
Yeah, when else am I going to get to see some of the parts of the White House? You know, like, who knows? I guarantee they probably wouldn't put us through a lot of the things, but it would be unique.
I want to be there. I was, especially now that Dana's talking about like they're making an international fight week and they're going to do all that stuff up there. I actually just talked to my wife and kid, maybe bring them out there that week. And all right, so one more change. One change I would have made between the two events, and I didn't have any discussions and I haven't asked. I think Joe Martinez should have been there for Noche UFC.
100%.
Joe Martinez should be there. Joe Martinez, especially with any kind of...
I do not understand.
It should
unless
have been Joe
Buffer
Martinez.
Was trying to pull some whatever. They should have swapped
Joe
it.
Martinez... Bruce Buffer doing the prelims at Allegiant, and then Michael
leading
Buffer.
Leading into his brother.
Right.
Like, which it's a no-brainer.
I could see Bruce. Like, I could see Bruce saying, look, I'm not interested in doing the prelims. I can see him doing that. But given that it's his brother, I don't think he'd have a problem with it. So I haven't asked Bruce.
You should
if
ask
he
him
beats,
when you see him.
Next time I see him,
see
I'll
they,
ask him.
See
if they
offered it.
Because again, he has done enough in his career that he could say, guys, thank you for the invitation, but I'm not doing the prelims. I'm not a prelim guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he could do that, but it's his brother.
Well, and even outside of that, like it wasn't like it was like a prelim on a fight night.
You're talking about
prelim on the biggest boxing event of the year. How would he not do that?
I would think
even regardless of it being prelims or one having his brother, but to think like, okay, Noche in San Antonio, that's not like what we thought it was going to be,
Allegiant Stadium. Yeah. I think he'd be in.
I think he'd be in. I think they must not have offered him.
I think
to
so
him.
Too.
I don't see why he wouldn't.
Again, I could see, but I don't think he would.
They wouldn't give me first class flight, so I was like, no.
Oh, they'd give him first class flight. That's definitely happening, man. So I thought that one change could have been nice.
And it just made all the sense in the world. You know, like, why not? You know, it's Noche. Let the guy that can actually speak Spanish.
Yeah, Joe Martinez. Anytime you've got Latin names and he's Spanish. I mean, he crushes it. And not that he's not good, just normal. But man, when it's that, he really shines at that point. Right?
Oh man.
All right, listen.
I still like. I always used to because I loved it when he would always be like Demasio Page. Just whenever I first met him, I was like, bro, say Demasio Page for me. We'd have some drinks, and I'd just make him call out some names. I'm sure it drove him fucking crazy.
That's amazing.
But yeah, next time I see him, I'm like, hey, can you, for old times, can you just call out Demasio Page for
give
me?
Give me a Demasio Page. That's great, man. Oh, he's the best, man. I miss that. That was a great era. All right, no UFC this weekend, so no UFC to break down and preview. I will say that if you're looking for some martial arts action, we do, of course, have UFC BJJ on Saturday night on UFC Fight Pass. I'm actually flying out tonight to meet with my crew tomorrow morning in Philadelphia. We are back at 2300 Arena, the historic 2300 Arena, for a night of UFC BJJ. Michael Chiesa is joining me on the mic.
Nice.
Chiesa is, Chiesa is a phenomenal commentator at anything, but I think he really, really, really shines in grappling. You know, obviously he's doing UFC BJJ as well, but he just has such a passion for submission grappling and jiu-jitsu that I think it really shines through. Not that he's phenomenal at MMA as well, but man, I love work, and he's just a good dude. So I'm looking forward to working with him again. Pat Sabatini versus Richie Lewis in the main event. Pat Sabatini, of course, a phenomenal submission grappler. Obviously, you know, making his UFC run as well. Expecting some UFC news later this year, maybe very soon after this. He's facing Richie Lewis, who Richie made his CFFC MMA debut just 3 weeks ago at CFFC 145, and now he's here in the main event. Junior Ocasio and Esteban Martinez title match there as well. Junior Ocasio, the reigning champ at 135 pounds. Against a challenger in Esteban Martinez. They actually met before back in 2021. Ocasio was victorious by referee's decision, but it's a matchup that he kind of feels like he didn't compete as well as he should. That year, Martinez did win IBJJF gold, so he won a world title that year. So to have a win over the world title holder in that year is not bad. But
it's not too bad.
It's not bad, but he's like, no, but I didn't perform the way I wanted to perform, so I'm back. And then Taylor Hyshaw against Nicole Matthew. Taylor Hyshaw, of course, we saw earlier this year. She won two matches in a night to claim the 125-pound title. Now she's moving up to 135 to try to claim the inaugural title there and be a champ. But Nicole Matthew is coming in to ruin that and steal that shine. So those are three title matchups in the featured bouts this weekend.
So tell me about this.
Matchup.
So I just went to the Cage Fury website. Mm-hmm. And I was just clicking on trying to look at the card, but I somehow stumbled into this link where it says, apply now. Get booked for your own super fight at CFFC BJJ.
Yeah.
So you could just, if you're a BJJ guy and you want to get involved, you could just literally fill out a form and then somebody will check your credentials.
It goes to Jonathan Webb, our matchmaker, for people that are volunteering.
Crazy.
Yeah, so if people want to get in.
Wow.
Fill out an application. You can get yourself on.
Yeah, if you want to talk the talk, you can walk the walk. That's crazy. It's literally just pulled up the website. I was like, holy shit,
yeah.
I could try to. I would not, but I'm just saying, like, if I was somebody, you could literally just apply to that. That's crazy.
Go straight to our guy, Jonathan Webb, who will put the matches together. So,
oh, that's bonkers.
Yeah, man. Good stuff. It should be a fun
Have
weekend.
You gotten many like submissions through that?
I don't get those because they go straight to Jonathan, yeah. So I don't know. I'll have to ask him.
You have to ask him.
How many have
intrigued.
You found on there?
Yeah, that people just like, they're like, I can do that.
Yeah.
I can do that and just boom, boom, boom. That's crazy.
That is cool.
You guys should put a fucking promo about it. Send something just like, hey, you know, do you have what it takes to be a CFFC BJJ competitor?
Not a bad idea.
You got to use that voice. Do you?
Just like that.
Just like that. Do you have what it takes?
That's fun.
That kind of morphed into, I don't know what that was there at the end there. That's cool.
All right, listen. Fun times. Good times. Hope everybody joins in this weekend. Did have to mention one sad, serious thing. Have to get into it.
Yes.
As much fun as we like to have on here.
Yes.
Shocking. Legit shocking news, the loss of a legend in the fight sports game,
yeah.
Tom Gerbasi.
And you can say it that, like, that's legit.
Legit.
I know we say, you know, a lot of times people are like, oh, legend gets tossed around too easy.
No.
this is for real.
Gerasi and not only in MMA, but boxing as well. Yep. So, I mean, in the combat sports.
That's what combat – you might as well just say combat sports. Yep. I mean, not that he was like – I've even heard people say that he had interest. Not that we ever really hear him, but even like pro wrestling and like everything. Like the guy, if it was a combat sport, he had his hands in it somewhere.
He did. And he was the man. Shocking news. So, you know, I first heard about it earlier in the week. I had somebody reach out to me, and it was one of those things, man. I was like, man, did you hear about Tom Gerasi? And instantly you're like – no, what, you know what I mean? And he passed, and I remember, like, initially I was like, ah, it's got to be bad information. Bad information. Like, hold on, man, you know. And basically the person informed me was like, hey, there's a couple other people that I know he was close with that I don't have their number. Could you please help reach out to these other folks that I know that you have connections with? And I was like, yeah. But I was a little bit hesitant at first, you know, because there weren't any news reports out and it hadn't been made public. And I was like, you know, please let this be wrong. Turns out it wasn't wrong. You know, still very, very youthful, to be honest with you, man. I mean, I know we're all getting a little bit older, but certainly not at the age that you would worry about it. A guy that
runs marathons,
was actively like on a
soccer team.
I mean, so active. Yep. And I guess maybe just one of those reminders, you know, I was actually talking to Kevin Ioli and, you know, Kevin was like, man, you know, hug your wife and your kid and make sure they know how much you love them. Cause you just, you know, and I hate to think of that way, but it's true. Like, it's just that reminder that like nothing's guaranteed. I mean, this guy was 57 years old and, you know, was just having normal conversations and normal work routine to the very end. Dude was a legend of the game. You know, had won boxing writer awards, had been involved in that. I used to sit next to him a lot. He wasn't traveling to events anymore, but he used to travel to events all the time. And it would be me and him and Kevin Ioli sitting next to each other on press row. And, I mean, a literally walking encyclopedia of the game. For a lot of people that don't know, like, he did basically all the notes and research. I mean, when fighters came into the UFC, they talked
the
to Tom Gerasi.
All that stuff. I'm sure he's probably not the one that sent out, because they send those out to media now.
Yeah.
That was all stretching back to what he started.
I'm sure it's some interns, you know, now or something, but when the staff was in the era when Zuffa wasn't that big, that was him. The format
him.
That they're in right now, the questions that are on the bios, Tom Gerasi did that. And
I think he still did some, because I think I saw a fighter tweet the other day. They were talking about how I always appreciate Tom giving me my call right before the fight, you know, so they could do whatever. And one of them, I felt like it wasn't too long ago. So I think
Steve
loved doing it.
Still doing,
you know?
Some. I saw, and I'd heard the story before, but I saw Simon Head, our good friend Simon Head. Yep. You know, at one point, you know, he had gone through some freelance things and some gigs that had dried up. Yep. And he was like, maybe it's not worth the chase anymore. You know, maybe it's like, maybe I just go get a quote-unquote real job and get out of this. And Tom Gerasi was like, talked him off a ledge and was like, "No, man, you're like, you're talented. You got this. You know what I mean? Yeah. Stick with it." And, you know, I mean, just, you will not find anybody that had anything nice. Always upbeat, always positive.
Yep.
Always
smiling.
He used to, I'll never forget this, man. It was so funny. There used to be a UFC promo, and it was cut from like a UFC broadcast where basically, like, I think Joe Rogan says, like, I can't believe this is really going to happen. And it was gold. He's like, this is going to happen. And so, like, Gerasi would just be sitting next to me, like, and a fight's about to happen. He'd look over at me, he's like, Morgan, I can't believe this is really going to happen. And I'd just look back at him, I'm like, it is going to happen. You know, and sometimes it'd be before a big title fight, or sometimes it might be before some ridiculous fight that's about to happen. You know, like, James Toney's getting in there or whatever. Like, I can't believe this is really going to happen. Like, it is going to happen, Gerasi. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, it was that guy where just, like, little inside jokes. And but his contributions to the space were unbelievable, man. And so – I don't know, and I know you. So I got to hang out with them a little bit. You got to work with them directly at the UFC, and you got to see how integral he was behind the scenes.
And that's the thing. Like, when I know when I came in there, and when we were, you know, I've always been behind the camera. And then, you know, like, as to when we start having to interview guys, and we talk about guys, and we try to find things to work on a highlight video, or things we'd try to, you know, find some piece of information. He was always the guy that put out the stuff, the bios and all the other kind of stuff. So, like, whenever I had a question about just an angle, an insight, anything, whatever, and you know that there's a bio, you go to that person.
Yep.
So that was always Tom, you know. He was always the person that, you know, whenever I had a question or whatever, an idea about whatever, he would be the person that I knew I could reach out to and be like, hey, what do you think about this? Or is this true that this guy did this?
Right.
Is this fact still good? And that's when I realized that he was doing all that stuff constantly,
yes.
always updating. Like, yep. you think that, you know, like the UFC does these PR reels where they have the same sort of footage that just lives in it over and over and over. For a long time, I thought the bios was just the same thing over and over and over, and it's not.
Nope.
He would constantly grind as a fighter, update, because he took it to the point that fighters are constantly updating. They're doing whatever things, you know, like, why stick with the old stuff? You know, like, find out where they're at in their life,
a
find out what's going
change,
on.
A coaching
team
change,
you know,
location,
all that other kind of stuff.
Everything.
Yeah, and he was just so meticulous and very so even-keeled where, you know, you knew, and you can ask any fighter, they knew and they trusted. There was a trust because they knew that he was going to come and not try to ding him for anything, you
right.
know, not try to do whatever, but he wanted to make sure that the fighters had a clear picture of what they were doing, where they were going through, and he was very even-keeled and made sure that the info that you needed was there. So I always respected the fact that, you know, whenever we could reach out to him, he was always there, you know, and then even after the time left, I knew that you could reach out to him and ask him stuff, and he was always just like, yeah, what's up, you know, blah, blah, blah. And in years recently, you know, mainly most of our interactions were always just either usually Facebook or whatever, commenting about his pictures he put about his granddaughters and all this other stuff. I mean, he loved his grandkids. It was just amazing seeing whatever. And I put in the tweet thing, you know, I share a birthday with him and Adam Hill. And it was always kind of like one of those weird
That's
things.
Wild.
So I'd always joke. I'd be like, I won't count the guy from up north or whatever. But no, I love Adam. But it was just like one of those surreal things. I was like, man, what are the chances that me and two other guys in this crazy industry that we do and share the birthday? Like, that can't be that. That can't happen or whatever. So I always felt like a certain kinship with him, too, because I felt like even though we were a few, you know, some years apart in age-wise, we were the same birthday, you know. So I think anybody feels like you have sort of like a kinship, you know. We're under the same stars or whatever. But it was just amazing, like, you know, and it's just, you know, for a guy that, you know, I feel like, you know, he set a great model. And one of the best things that I hear from a lot of people is that he could have been braggadocio. He could have just been like, oh, guys, I've been doing this for so long. Look at what I've done, you know, like, and not give his time to people. But he always didn't matter whether you were the smallest media person, whether you're new to the sport, or whether you're a veteran. He gave everybody the same time and effort. And that's the biggest vacuum that I feel. I'm happy that we have his books. He just came out with another book. And I know he was going to write another. He was supposed to write another book about women's boxing. So I'm glad and grateful that we have that. We were able to pick his brain about that sort of stuff, but it's just such a huge vacuum of knowledge that we just lost, in a sense. We lost it in living for him, you know. Like, yes, we can go to his books or whatever, but the best part about him was just his brain and the way you could work a conversation and get a unique standpoint from him that would put you on to a different thing. So I'm sure there's hundreds of writers that have had a thought about an angle or a story, and then having a conversation with him, it became something much bigger and better than what it was ever going to be, you know. And that's the sad part, is that, you know, we need more humble, smart, incredibly giving individuals in this space. And he was one of the best and biggest ones. And I think you can't find any person that can't remember an image of him with a smile, because he always had a smile.
Always had a smile.
You know, so regardless of how in the weeds, you know, we know what it's like working with the UFC, and the dude's been doing it forever. He was always smiling. He was always happy,
people,
you know.
And he was dealt with it all.
Dealt with it all. And, you know, and he, it's just, yeah, it's just, it's so sad. You know, I'm so happy to hear the outpouring of love. I have not heard one bad thing, and I'd be really surprised to hear that there ever was any particular thing, because that's just the kind of guy he was. And anytime you lose somebody like that in the space, the whole community as a whole takes a hit, you know, because it's they're not made the same way anymore. You know, I hope that the new kids and the people coming into it have the chance to interact with people like that, so that they can at some point be that to somebody else. Because now a lot of people come up, it's so dog eat dog, and how can I do this on social media? How can I do whatever to get my name up there? And that's just not. Lucky enough, we were able to come into the space in the time when somebody like that was there to kind of help keep it in your mind that this is the way I want to be. This is how I want to be. You know, this is what I want to be. And if anything, that's what I try to do. But it's certainly because of people like Tom that reaffirms that if you do good things to good people out there, they in turn do good things to other people out there, and it just pays it forward. And so it's sad that he's not there, you know, and, you know, condolences to his wife, Sonia, his daughter, Jordan, and his two granddaughters. It's a huge loss for them, but it's a huge loss for the community. This is
it's you know, I was thinking about it, you know, like, because I saw all the outpouring of respect and appreciation too, which was beautiful to see, because we know, you know, how people feel about him. I always do wonder when people pass, you know, did they know that? Were they aware of that at the time? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, how respected and admired and appreciated they were. Yeah. You always worry about that. And again, that's a reminder too to, like,
to say it more
to
often.
To say it more often to people. But on the other hand, and not that it does anything to replace their loss, but I did think, I hope his family is seeing this too, because I think they would be so proud to know. Because Tom wasn't the most, like you said, he wasn't, like, boisterous on social media or out there, you know what I mean? But, like, you see the out, like, anybody that contacted with him was like, oh, that's the man right there. Like, that's the man.
Yep.
And so I hope that his family is at least seeing those messages and seeing, like, oh, my gosh, you know, my husband, my father, my grandfather was so well-loved and respected, you know what I mean, to at least, like, kind of know what he meant to all of us that are in the space, you know what I mean? So,
he's huge. I hope they deserve. I mean, like, he's the kind of impact that, I mean, they needed to, like, name, like, a wing of the building or something for him. I mean, like, his contribution to the sport and even boxing in general. I mean, like, there needs to be, like, a Tom Gerbasi Lifetime Award or something, you know, because of what he's given to the sport. And I think the mentorship that he's given some of my favorite writers and some of my good friends, you know, after reading a lot of the posts, now I can attribute a lot of how they are because of some of the time they've done with him. So I hope to see, and I know the UFC put a little thing out or whatever. I mean, but I hope they continue and do something even more to kind of honor his contribution to that organization.
I've seen like arenas where, like, the press room is named after somebody. I don't know if that works for the UFC because they're not always in the same place. But I don't know. You know,
they got that damn meeting room they don't use that often at the Apex or at the PI. Yeah, like, why not just name that
after him? So, I mean, it's a small thing, but, like, his name deserves to be there. You know, and I always respect it too, because I saw a lot of people saying this about, like, it didn't matter if you were the headliner or the first prelim. Like, he gave you that attention. I remember, like, Dan Stupp, I'll never forget, man, when we started building Junkie, that I told him, like, my goal, and I've always felt this way, like, for every fighter that steps in there, like, that fight is the biggest week of their life, you know what I mean, at that time. And, like, everybody has a story to tell. And I always told Dan, like, I want to get to a point where, like, if there's 12 fights on a UFC card, like, we have 24 pre-fight stories because we're telling everybody's story. And obviously, as you get to a corporation that's worried all about clicks and views and money, you know, they may say, well, that doesn't make sense to commit that kind of resources, et cetera, et cetera. But I always felt that way, and I know Tom felt that way too. So I always felt like a connection that him and I kind of saw the sport the same way. And just a good dude, man. Just a good dude. I know, and a name that, like I said, a lot of people might not have heard, or maybe you just saw it in a byline in passing, you know what I mean, but didn't really know. But a man that was legit universally respected among every one of his peers and everyone that had an influence around him. So gone way too soon. Yep. And I think we're all still kind of processing with it, but just definitely wanted to mention his name for sure.
Yep.
No easy way out of that for sure. I know Hot T's on his way over here. He's back in training camp. He's out of retirement, I hear. Do we know what he's doing yet?
It's a fight circus thing. So even though I'm the, like, I asked him, I was like, who's your competitor? Who's your opponent or whatever? So we went and we worked out yesterday. And I don't know what the deal is with fight circus, if it's, like, works or if it's, like, legit whatever.
Fight circus is funny, by the way. It is
fun.
Oh,
my gosh.
Like, I mean, it's
it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
Got midgets fighting dudes or whatever. So, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be whatever.
So we don't know what he signed up for yet?
No.
Okay.
I don't think they have an opponent or whatever. But but if you're telling me, like, they usually do works, I'm sure it's just going to be him.
They'll do crazy. They'll crazy
do something
stuff.
Fun.
Yeah, they'll do,
wacky
they'll do
or whatever.
Fun.
Hopefully they'll fight, like, a bunch of midgets that beat up on him or something.
But he's going into training camp. He's got to look good for it, right?
I don't know. You see the fucking picture they put out? When we were doing the Ben fight, which was a real fight, we were shooting a bunch of other stuff. And so we did that scene upstairs in his office where it looked like he's sitting in that pile of, like, cocaine or whatever. Right. They use that as like the picture, and I'm like, oh god.
They say Pablo Escobar.
Escobar, that's it, Escobar. So yeah, no, it should be interesting. But yeah, I mean, that's what it takes to get in the gym and keep working. Let's go.
I love it.
So,
what is
chest day today?
Did you see chest day? I like it. What date is that? Do you remember? I saw it too. October 17th.
Is it really?
Yeah, so a month away. I don't know if I'm in town or not. I'll definitely.
So
go
Fight
check
Circus
out.
Is
I
trying
like
to. They're
Circus.
Trying to. Yeah, they're trying to do like a residency out here. So they're hoping to like get something set up. I think this will be the first event that they're doing out here, and they're hoping to set something up where they're going to have repeat sort of thing. I mean, because that's the certain sort of thing. When you think about like Vegas events or spectacles, like that, it definitely
Circus.
Seems like something could be a repeatable sort of thing where somebody's like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do tonight. Well, let's go watch midgets fight, you know, or whatever. Or go watch that, you know, the two brothers fight each other. They do wacky stuff on there. So yeah, it should be interesting, but yeah, I mean, could be good. And our friend Wombat Jones is involved with that now. So
that's great. Yeah. They've done it over in Thailand for years.
Yeah.
And, it's always a blast, man.
It's hilarious.
We'll see what they're cooking. I've been a fan of Fight Circus from the beginning. So we'll, you know, obviously we didn't cover it at MMA Junkie or anything like that, but it's just to tune in.
But I'll go
watch
see
it.
I'll go see it while it's here for sure.
It's, it's like a combat sports, like acid trip, I guess, basically. It's like the way to explain it. So, anxious to see it. So yeah, hopefully we're free on October 17th and we can make it out there. So all right, listen, with that said, off to your vacation. Hopefully everybody will tune in Saturday night, CFFC BJJ, and next week, you know, you'll be on the road, but
we'll get it.
The show never stops. We'll keep it going. Thanks for listening.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.